So again, welcome. This is so Episcopalian. You know, in 5 to 10, there were like 3 people here. So it's good. You're on time. I want to talk primarily about Ephesians today, and then a phrase or two from the Psalm. We've been talking about this gospel, and it's actually one sort of longer passage from the Gospel of John where, again, we've been hearing about sort of the developed community, the developed church in the Gospel of John, talking some about their own Eucharistic theology and about some of the controversies. You have to kind of read between the lines to hear some of the controversies that were at work in the community of John and people leaving. And yet, of course, Jesus was a very controversial teacher during his lifetime. And it feels doubtless that there is a kernel of memory of Jesus who taught things and people found them difficult to accept or difficult to follow. Think of give away all your possessions and come and follow me. But people hear that, and when they realize Jesus was actually serious about this, they said, maybe I'll watch at a distance. I do want to sort of just draw your attention to that sense of how resolute Jesus is. You get the sense that if no one had followed him at all, if he had been completely alone in his proclamation of God's love, that he would have done it by himself. And he's you can look at him in so many different ways, but never forget that he was a person of huge courage. Huge courage. So, excuse me, I ran into this at St. John's, had to make a joke about my nose running, and actually it's not all that funny, really. sort of desperation that drove me to it. I don't know what it is, smoke or something. So, excuse me. I want to talk about Ephesians today. Because Ephesians, I think, may on the surface of it look like it has nothing at all to do with our contemporary life. You get kind of a first century mythical view of the world in which evil is sort of personified, and the author of Ephesians is saying that it's not against flesh and blood that we have to do battle, but against evil powers in the heavenly places, cosmic powers of evil that threaten us. And so what does that have to do with us? And I would say, actually, a lot. I would say it has a lot to do. But not necessarily. We don't have to necessarily agree with a first century way of talking about forces that gather our energy and make us less than we actually are as human beings. I would say one of the things that's at issue here, as we say in our vision statement, that we are called to become authentically human. Authentically human in communion with God and with each other and with creation and with ourselves. And what's at work here in this passage of Ephesians is one of the ways that we get drawn into alliances with each other, and it actually, the result is that we become less than human. We become less than human. And this is not any, I think, great insight, but think of the way the world is divided. Think of the way the world is divided against, groups gather together, and you have divisions along political lines. You have divisions along racial lines, national lines, ethnic lines, religious lines. And all of those things are seeds around which communities form. And the essential thing that I'm trying to talk about today is that there are many inauthentic ways that human beings gather together in groups. Many inauthentic ways that human beings gather together in groups. And the really essential feature of inauthentic groups is that they are almost invariably defined by who they are against. To belong to the group, you have to buy into who it is that you're supposed to hate. And that, I would say, is of the devil. It is a satanic invitation to join with others in human solidarity and you join with them by who it is that you hate. And invitations to do that they're everywhere. They are everywhere in our world. And so you have to just kind of tune your ear to listen for satanic invitations. And again, when I say satanic, I'm not talking about cloven hooves and sulfur. I'm talking primarily, the image originates in the judicial system of the Near East. Thus, Satan was the prosecuting attorney. The Satan was the one who made the accusation. I've got it on you, and I'm going to do everything I can. My only criterion for selecting what I'm going to say about you is that it makes you look bad. Anybody hear any echo of that in our contemporary political debate? My criterion for what I'm going to say about you is, does it make you look bad? I don't care. I'm not going to inquire into the truth. I'm not going to acknowledge our common brotherhood and sisterhood. I'm not going to acknowledge that I belong to you. I'm just going to do things and say things that make you look bad, that put the blame on you, that put the responsibility on you. And those who share this belief can just join together and feel such solidarity, such righteousness. Even though it's satanic, it's born of accusation, and the other word, diabolos, the devil, the one who divides. That's what it means. And so, whenever you get, just think of it this way, whenever you hear in our social world invitations to join against someone, or you hear of groups divided, sometimes for generations, hundreds, sometimes it feels thousands of years, when you hear those kinds of divisions, know that human beings are being drawn up into what I would speak of as an unholy communion. Yeah, and it always makes us less than we are. It always takes away our dignity. It always robs those who we are against of their dignity. It debases the whole human experience. And when the author of Ephesians talks about putting on spiritual warfare, spiritual armor, think of that as how much of our human dignity is really to be found in the distinct individual voice that each one of us here is graced with. Our own individual discerning heart, the touch of God's presence in our heart that helps us to see that everyone is a brother and sister. They may be captive. They may be enslaved by fear. They may be, injustice may have eroded their humanity to the point where all they can think of is to get vengeance. But all of these, this is captivity. This is spiritual captivity of human beings. And I believe Jesus is always calling us out of that false kind of belonging into the true belonging of individuals who are asking questions, making up their own minds, discerning for themselves what the truth is. You know, the priest and the lawyer had great reasons for walking by the guy on the road, and it was the Samaritan who came over to him and ignored the group divisions that were supposed to pertain and said, "The guy's in trouble. I'm going to help him." And when I'm talking about this, in a few minutes, we're going to be saying the words of Eucharistic prayer seed. And is the moment at the end of that prayer. May this holy communion make us one body, one spirit in Christ, that we may worthily serve the world in His name. And I always think of that in terms of the unholy communion against which it is paired. There are unholy communions. In fact, you would say the human race is governed by unholy communions. Communions that are born of hatred and fear. And that's what the author of Ephesians is talking about. There are these big collective forces that you can all, they never come out, you can't kind of see them. They're just at work on people, and they're kind of unconscious. And they always make us less than we really are. This is the spiritual warfare in heavenly places. We might use different language, but it's still here. So I want to say just a word about the psalm. I love this psalm. About the happy are the people whose hearts are set on the pilgrim's way. Those who go through the desolate valley will find it a place of springs. Those who go through the desolate valley will find it a place of springs. And part of my love for this passage comes out of my history as a psychotherapist. Because in this little phrase, those who go through the desolate valley will find it a place of springs, is really counterintuitive advice. Because most of us want to get away from the desolate valley. Most of us want to avoid the places where we feel little, or where we feel ashamed, or where we know we have failed in some way, where we have hurt someone, or we have done things to the harm of our own self. We all have those things. Not one of us stands or sits in this room without some significant human failure that marks our hearts. And what this failure does, and of course it can be real or imagined, I mean the judgments we pass on ourselves are almost always erroneous. They're either too lax or too harsh. We miss on both sides. We rarely sort of correctly assess, you know, how we're doing. But what this means when we have these places in our hearts that we want to get away from is that we're divided. We're divided against ourselves. You know, there's a part that we want to affirm. There's a part. I want you to know this part about me. I'm going to put this on my resume. And then the other stuff, why do I want to keep that in? And I just wish it weren't part of me at all. And to go through the desolate springs, the desolate valley, to find it a place of springs, I think has to do with opening your heart to the truth about yourself, so that the things that you wanted to keep at arm's length and even repudiate as being a part of your life and your story, those things, you now find a way to include them yet again. And it doesn't destroy you. It doesn't destroy you. You find that you can look honestly at who you are and who you've been, and your life is illumined, but it's illumined compassionately. It's not the accuser saying, look at that. Worthless. That's not the voice that will show you who you are. And if you're coming to that conclusion, you're listening to the wrong voice. So, what I'm saying here is very consistent with the teachings of Jesus. He was, you know, when he said, when you go to a banquet, don't take the place of honor, sit in the low place, and you'll be raised up. Oh, a low place, I mean, it's true. He's using the metaphor of a seat that has little honor attached to it. So what he's really talking about is that inner process whereby, in a sense, you humble yourself to engage and to welcome in those parts of yourself that you wish were not there. And that brings our inner division to an end, and we are raised up to a place of honor. Or Rilke, the poet, says, you have to be in conversation. conversation with what changes you. You have to be conversant with transformation. From what experience have you suffered most? Is drinking bitter to you? Become the wine. Again, this counterintuitive movement where you go toward and you embrace the very thing that seems to be so damaging to you. You open your arms to it and you embrace it. And you find that you are not a superhuman hero. You are a humble little human being capable of significant failures who is nonetheless loved beyond imagining by the source of all reality. It's a good bargain. You give up your pretensions of superiority and you become an actual living human being loved by God with all your failings right there on the table. I mean, if it works, and if you kind of carry this process through to the end, you have nothing more to be afraid of. Nothing more to be afraid of. If you're already in touch with the worst that anybody could ever find out about you, what else is there to be discovered? You can just sit in this deeply grounded, rooted, humble place, not afraid. So, this obviously has connections with avoiding the spiritual warfare that we talked about in Ephesians. Humble, grounded people who are honest about themselves and are embraced by the love of God are not going to be drawn in easily to groups whose basis is hatred and division. You know, wisdom will protect you. Spiritual armor will protect you. Let's do our work. You know, Jesus, always take the log out of your own eye first. And nobody who's trying to attach the blame to somebody else is taking the log out of their own eye first. And Jesus said, if you don't do that, you're blind. Got a log in your eye you can't see. So let's do our work. Let's be awake to those invitations to really demonic associations, and let us be grateful that as individuals with our own discerning hearts, we can be in communion with each other and with God. May this holy communion make us one body and one spirit in Christ, that we may serve the world in